in Parshas Shmos, the Torah says, "Vayomer Melech Mitzrayim Lam Yaldos HaIvrios Asher Shem Achas Shifra V'Shem Hashenis Pua." And here, the midwives, the Jewish midwives, are commanded by Paro to kill the male embryos, V'ra'isim Alavnayim, before they're born. So there are a couple of questions that we want to raise here in this parsha, and the most fundamental of which touches on the halachic definition of an ubar. What is the status of a fetus in its mother's womb, halachically? Is it considered a nefesh, and therefore there would obviously be a prohibition to destroy such a nefesh? It would be shvichas damim. Or is it not considered a nefesh, and therefore ostensibly there would be no prohibition against killing the ubar? In this case, we have to raise a different question, and that is, we know there are two systems of law. One that governs the Jewish people, Dine Yisrael, and there's another system of law that governs the Bnei Noach. Is it possible that there's a change here in the definition and the status of an ubar regarding the two different legal systems, depending upon which legal system you are talking about? And the reason why I mention this is because the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim, when he discusses the differences between and the unique halachos and chiyuvim of Ben Noach, he writes that a Ben Noach is in violation of a capital crime for murder, even in the case of an ubar. Even if he kills the fetus, he will be condemned to death as a capital punishment for that crime. With regard to Yisrael, we don't find that. Now, getting back to our parasha, Paro commands the Mialdos HaIvrios. And the question is obvious. Why? It would seem more logical and more natural for Paro to command his non-Jewish midwives, the Mialdos HaMitrios. I mean, after all, you know, a king of Mitzrayim would turn to the Mitzrim. Why then, oddly enough, does he turn to the Mialdos HaIvrios? And there may be quite a number of answers to this question. What we want to study is the answer to Marsha. I have to tell you that as a student in yeshiva, I never found a common language with the Marsha. It was very difficult for me to learn Marsha. I was in the Rav Shir for 5 years. I can't remember any occasion which he even quoted the Marsha. But certainly I don't remember that he encouraged us to look in the Marsha. My father, may rest in peace, told me that in Europe, in his day, back in the old days, there was no such thing as learning Tosfos without the Marsha. The Marsha was almost an assumption, a necessary accompaniment. But in this case, I'd like to dedicate most of today's shiur in the question of a Ben Noach regarding Ubrin and how a Din Yisrael might be different to a particular Marsha. Now, before we see the Marsha, let's take a look at a Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin. It's the first on your page, Nun Zayin Amud Beis, quoting a member of Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel added to the original statement that was offered regarding the nature of the chiyuv of a Ben Noach with regard to Shvichas Domin. And the Gemara says that Ben Noach nerag b'dayon echod ubeid echod below asra mipi ish afilu mipi korov below mipi isha. Mishum Rabbi Shmuel amru afala ubrin. The Gemara asks me nani mili, what's the source for these halachos? And they all derive from the very same pasuk. Amar Rabbi Yehuda di Amar Kra, ach es dimchem linafshosechem edrosh. The Gemara dashes every extra word in this pasuk, which was addressed to the Bnei Noach. First, afilu dayan echa. Then it says, miyad kol chaya afilu shalo basro, which means that a Ben Noach will be condemned to death for a criminal act, a violation of one of the Sheva Mitzvot of Ben Noach, even if he didn't get a forewarning. Edroshenu umiyad ha'odom afilu bi'eid echad, one witness is sufficient. Miyad ish v'lo miyad isha, echav afilu karov, even a relative could testify and condemn the accused. Mishuma Bishmol Amru Af Al Ha Ubrin, a Benoach is chayef for killing an Uber. My time with Rabbi Shmuel the Siv Shofach Dom Be'adam Dom Ha'adam Be'adam Domo Yishofach. Ezu Adam Shu Ba'adam, the Gemara is dashening Ha'adam Be'adam, a man within a man. Heavy Omer Ze Ubar Shabimei Imo. So there's no doubt that the Gemara, as we saw in the Rambam as well, in Hilchos Malachim, puts the Ubar into the category of a Nefesh as far as Ben Noach is concerned. What about the case of Yisrael? So we have a Marsha on that Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Marsha says, Amarti liyashev b'parsha shmos, I would like to answer a question on the Pasuk. Shedigdei kakosuv lomar, the Pasuk is very careful about pointing out that Vayomer Melech Mitzrayim lemialdos ha'ivrios, that Paro commanded the Jewish midwives. Says the Marsha, why the Jewish midwives? Devadai Paro lo shol mehem laharog hascharim biyodayim. First and foremost, he would never have asked the Jewish midwives to destroy the babies once the male babies once they were born, but rather lemialdos, he meant to command the midwives to destroy the embryo before the embryo is born. Not only that, says the Marsha, he never would have turned to the B'nai Noach, and in this case to the Aldos HaMitzrios, even if we're only talking about the Ubar. Again, if it's a born child, there's no difference between a Jewish or a non-Jewish midwife. But in the case of an Ubar, there's a fundamental difference. The Ben Noach Muzal Shvichas Domim, a Ben Noach would not have listened to any command, even from Paro himself, to destroy a living being, because at this point at least anti-Semitism was still low-key, and it wouldn't be an absolute violation of the Bnei Noach. The assumption that Marsha is working with is that the Bnei Noach would be careful about their Sheva Mitzvahs, and the king of Egypt could not legislate to violate those basic rules. Ulekach, and therefore, this is Marsha's Chiddush, Lo Amar Kein Lamialdos HaMitzrios. Why? The Mialdos HaMitzrios, to the same extent they were enjoined from destroying a baby once it's born, they were also enjoined from destroying the embryo before its birth. Shehuzeru al shvichas domim, afilu bi'ubrim. So what was Paro's cheshbin? Avol Mialdos HaIvrios. Now listen carefully to the language, the choice of words of the Marsha. Asher hutar lahem laharog ubar b'mei imo. It is permissible for a Jewish midwife to destroy the life of an embryo, and therefore the Ra'isem Al-Havnaim, Paro commands the Jewish midwives to kill the embryo, the male embryo, Kodem Sheyetze La'afyar Olam, before it is born, before the head pops out, in Benhu V'Misem Oso, etc. In other words, there was a chance that the midwives would comply with the command of Paro to destroy the embryos, because hutar lehem, there's no prohibition to destroy the embryos, and this would all be kodem sheyotze liavir olam. Once it's born, it's a nefesh gomur. V'kevan sheyefsher b'hem liftar mishvichas domen rak betchilas yitzias havlad kodem sheyotze rosho, and since the only way that they would be permitted, according to Jewish law, to take the life of the embryos before it pops its head, before it's a nefesh, therefore, hutzrach loseis lahem simonim. Fantastic chiddush of the Marsha. The Marsha refers to a Gemara in Sota on Daf Yud Aleph on the days. The Gemara in Sota has a number of drushos on the word of Nayim. According to one drusha, the Gemara derives of Nayim that Paro was giving him a lesson to know when a woman is about to give birth, when her thighs are cold, like the Evan, like the stone, like a cold stone. According to another Dea, Avnayim was an indication of a simon that Paro gave them to be able to determine whether the child, whether the embryo was male or female. If the child faces downwards, then you know it's a male. If it faces upwards, it's a female. Of course, this is no longer true in our time. I guess Nishtanu Atvayim, something changed in nature. But be that as it may, the Marsha claims that the purpose and the goal of this Gemara in Sota is to explain how Paro anticipated that the Jewish midwives would be legally permitted to do and comply with his request. If they would be obedient, they would kill the embryo, they would know how to determine when the woman is about to give birth. They didn't want to have the embryo killed early, too early, because then they wouldn't be able to fool the Jewish mothers. So it had to be the last moment before birth, but in order to determine when that moment is there, is ripe, it's about to be born, the head is about to pop out, he gave them these simonim, ureisem al havnayim. Now Paro assumes that the stage is set. The melyaldos or ivrios will no doubt comply with his request because there's no Easter for them to kill the Ubar B'mei Imo. Now, truth be told, there is a Tosus in Nida, which you'll see on the top of page 2, on Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, who apparently supports this view that with regard to Dine Yisrael, there's no prohibition against killing the Ubar, because the Ubar doesn't have the status as a nefesh. It's a long Tosus. We're not going to go through it now. You'll take a look and go through it. But it would seem, if you take a look about four lines before the end of this paragraph, that the Tosus says that, let's just see the language here. He says, Imtim Salam de Mutter Laharig Vibeten, etc., etc., and it makes no difference whether the mother's alive or not alive. And basically he comes up with a fascinating shita that although there's no prohibition against murder vis-a-vis the embryo, nevertheless we will violate the Shabbos if the life of the embryo is threatened. So for the sake of Hatzolas Ha'ubar, we will violate the Shabbos even though there's no Ritzicha in killing the Ubar. However, putting the Tosus for a moment on the side, I would like to study with you two sugyas in Shas, both of which I think open and shut indicate that there is a prohibition against killing an Ubar. This business that the Marsha indicates that Hutalahem, you're allowed to kill, take the life of an embryo, this is against, again, he may have the Tosus in neither, but the bulk of the evidence is against him. First of all, if you take a look at a Mishnah, which is quoted also in the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Ayin Dal, but the Mishnah in Olos, the famous Mishnah in Olos in the 7th Perek says, Isha Shimakasha Lele, a woman who's about to give birth, and the birth process itself endangers, threatens her life, Muta Laragas Ubar, you're allowed to kill the Ubar for the sake of the mother. And the Mishnah is very outspoken about that, saying that you're allowed to kill the Ubar for the sake of saving the mother. That's all same. And then the Mishnah goes on to say that only applies if the baby hasn't popped its head. Once Rov Rusho is out, then we apply the principle of Ein Doka Nefesh Mivnei Nefesh. Apparently, before the Uber is born, it's not called a Nefesh. And if it's not called a Nefesh, then, according to the Marsha, there's no Isur Shvichas Domin. But I raise the following question. The Gemara says that the reason we kill the Ubar before it pops its head out is because that's all it's aim. You know, there's a special circumstance over here. We're not saying that as a general rule you're allowed to kill an Ubar. On the contrary, the law is just the reverse. The Gemara is working with the premise you are not permitted to take the life of an embryo. To abort the baby in its mother's womb is absolutely prohibited. However, if there's a choice between a nefesh eino gomur and a nefesh gomur, then we prefer the nefesh gomur. So we'll even take the life of the ubar actively, cut it up into pieces in order to save the mother. So because it's a nefesh eino gomur for the sake of a nefesh gomur. But as a general rule, if there would not be this extreme extenuating circumstances of saving a life, then the rule of thumb would be that we do not take the life of an ubar, and that's absolutely prohibited. Number two, the sugyan erchin on Daf Zayin Ovid Aleph. The Mishnah there in Erchin discusses the case of a woman who's been condemned to death, to Mises Bezdin, and the question is, what if she's pregnant? And the Mishnah says it depends. If the baby hasn't been born yet, the woman is not in the process of birth, then we kill the mother even though it means that the embryo will die as well. If, however, the baby is in the process of being born, then we let the mother give birth, and then only afterwards do we put her to death. And the Gemara explains, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, why is it that in the Reisha, in the first case, where the baby is not yet ready to be born, we will kill both the mother and the baby, and not only that, Rabbi Yehuda takes it a step further, kill the baby first. We hit the mother in her stomach, and we kill the baby. And why is that so? Mishum nivul. Because if we kill the mother while she's pregnant without killing the ubar, then it could be that after death, the ubar will be born. And here there's a whole machlok between Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershon, exactly what's the nivul here? Why is it so contemptuous? Why is it so disgusting and an insult, so to speak, to the deceased if there'll be a birth process after death? But you see one thing, that there was a premise in the Gemara that you're not allowed to take the life of the ubar. The reason why we take the life of the ubar in this case, and Rashi spells it out, take a look, is because ubar yerech imo. Right now we define the ubar, the embryo, as part of the mother. And insofar as the mother is chayevis misa, she's to be killed, we kill the ubar as well, but only as a separate limb. Now, in the case of the ubar, since we're going to kill the mother and the ubar will presumably die, therefore the ubar has a very limited life span. In other words, we can already predict now that as a result of this process, this capital punishment, the ubar will never come to fruition, will never live. Now, the Chavos Yair, Rav Bachrach, in a very, very famous landmark tshuva about aborting a baby, an embryo, he quotes this Gemara, and he says that the whole heter, the reason why we kill the ubar here in this case, despite the fact that it's prohibited to kill an ubar, is because of the nevel issue. I mean, add that also to Rashi's calculation that the ubar will die insofar as it's part of Yerech Imo, and that certainly explains the fact that we'll kill the mother even though the baby will die. But here, to kill the baby first, the embryo, I mean, when I say baby, is based on the fact of nivul. Nivul ames is such a severe prohibition that in this case that the uber is going to die anyway, so we don't view it as a viable, potential viable nefesh. Therefore, the isur is reduced, and because of nivul, we will be permitted to take to kill the ubar. But obviously, says the Chavos Yair, as a general rule, except with the rare exception of this case where we're putting a woman to death, the ubar is doomed to die anyway, and where there's another additional factor to take into consideration that plays here, and that is nivul, barring all those circumstances, in a regular case where a woman is about to give birth, like the case of the Mialdo Saivrios, in the case of the Yoledes, where she's about to give birth to, Baruch Hashem, a viable baby, and then you want to kill the ubar, certainly that would be prohibited. So we have, to summarize, two sugyas in the Gemara which present the thesis that we can kill the ubar in very extenuating, limited circumstances. Either in the case in Olos, which is also in Sanhedrin, to save the mother, will kill the ubar, or in the case of Erechin, in the case of a baby who's going to die anyway because the mother, ubar Yerech Imo, the mother is being put to death. And add to that the special pressing fact of the circumstance of nivul, then we come up with a heter to kill the ubar. But the general rule, obviously, is that we don't kill an ubar. That's not permissible. And there are at least two Tosas in Shas that I know of that present this thesis. If you take a look at Tosas on Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph, Tosas applies the rule that there's no Easter that applies to a Ben Noach and doesn't apply to Yisrael. Kol Milsa D'Nesel Ben Noach Nesel Yisrael. He applies this to the case of killing an Ubar. And he says that if a Ben Noach is enjoined from killing an embryo, then for sure a Jew is also enjoined likewise, because every Issa that applies to Ben Noach, ipso facto, must apply to Yisrael. And Tosas elsewhere in Masechta Chulin on Daf Lamed Gimel likewise talks about the Issa of killing an Ubar. The only problem is that neither of these two Tosas in present a clear definition of what the nature of this Issa is. How do you classify it? It doesn't seem to be an Isur Etzicha because we're talking about an Nefesh Einu Gamur, but on the other hand, it is prohibited. I'm not sure what is it. Is it some sort of Avizrayu, the Shvichas Domim? It's an extension of Shvichas Domim, but it's not full-fledged Shvichas Domim. Does it come under some other Avera? I don't know. But clearly the evidence is stacked in favor of the fact that there is no heter to kill an ubar unless that heter is coming from very extenuating circumstances. And therefore coming full swing back to the Marsha, whose premise is that the reason why Paro anticipated that the Jewish midwives would indeed obediently put into effect his command to kill the Jewish male embryos is because there's no Issa to kill an embryo. That doesn't apply in Jewish law and in Israel. That premise does not seem to be correct. And therefore this Marsha baffles me. But I just want to tell you, if you take a look on page 1, one of the Mefarshei HaTorah, more recent, about 150 years ago, the Ponim Yafos, I have it here pasted on you, for I got it from Bar Ilan. He says that the Gemara in Sota, which is on Daf Samach, on Daf Yudal from the base, this is the Gemara that we made reference to before. Take a look at the second paragraph of the Ponim Yafos. He says, "The Efsha Shezel Shamru Chazal Shetavan LaAvera VeLo Nitbu'u." The Gemara says that Paro commanded the Jewish midwives to violate a crime, and they did not submit. Now it's interesting, when you think about the language that the Gemara employs here, Shetavon LaAvera, that he, Paro, commanded them to violate a crime, this itself would be an open and shut case against the Marsha's premise. Here you see quite explicitly that for the midwives to kill, to destroy the embryo, would have been a violation, would have been an Avera. And therefore, it's very difficult to assume, as the Marsha would assumes, that Huto Lehem Laro Gesa Ubrim. But if you take a look in the Pasuk speaks about Vaterena Hamialdus Eselokim. There was an element of Yiras Shamayim here that played in. It could be that the Marsha would claim that even though they certainly would be permitted to kill the Ubar, but they did it within this context of a Yiras Shamayim. They went Lifnim Mishur Sadin, they went above and beyond. But in any event, let's get back to the Ponim Yafos. He takes the Gemara literally, and he thinks that Paro was tovea them to do an Avera. Says the Ponim Yafos, Sherotzo Linasosam. Paro had a whole plan over here, and he wanted to test these Mialdos. Now, just let's take a minute's break, because I want to fill you in on the first paragraph of the Ponim Yafos. It's not so relevant to this, but it's very interesting in and of itself. He wants to know why there are only two Mialdos that are involved here, and the Torah mentions them by name. What about all the other Mialdos? Where were they? So he points out that according to Chazal, the only Shevet in Mitzrayim, that was in Mitzrayim and continued the Bris Milah, was Shevet Levi. And in Paro's mind, all the other Shvatim, since they had forsaken the mitzvah of Milah, they were no longer considered Jews. Now, Moshe, you asked me the question before, is it true that these laws and these distinctions between Bnei Noach and Yisrael would apply in the case of Paro talking to the Mialdos Ivrios before Matan Torah? And the answer apparently is yes. Paro was confused, he was mistaken, he thought that all the other Shvatim had forfeited their status as Bnei Yisrael. They were no longer Jews, they were no longer part of this nation, because they gave up the mitzvah of Milah. And only Shevet Levi was left as Jews, and therefore he thought by addressing himself to the Mialdos of Shevet Levi, in this case two Mialdos who came from Shevet Levi, he was finding the two Jewish candidates who would be very good for this job, because as the Marsha understood, there's no prohibition incumbent upon Jews to kill, enjoining Jews from killing embryos. Now Paro, according to the Ponim Yafos, comes up with a very clever plan. What was his plan? Let's see the response of the Jewish Mialdos. I'm reading the text here on the first this first line in the second paragraph. He says, "Ki bameshe mianu b'tzivui amelech." He says that if, and this is indeed what happened, these midwives, Jewish midwives, would refuse to comply with the command of Paro, hayu b'sakana, their lives were in danger. And the Chasam Sofer here on this parasha goes into great arichus about the fact that Paro implied a threat that if they would not be obedient to his command, he would have them killed. So the Mialdos certainly put their lives into danger. We find the Chazal, that's why they got a tremendous amount of reward. But if they did, in which they did, they put themselves in danger rather than kill the Ubrios, Umasra Nafshon, this would definitely be a statement, a Hodas Baldin, a confession, admission on their part, on the part of the Mialdos, that they indeed had the status of Jews. Why is that so? Says the Panim Yafos, because Ben Noach Eino Mitzuva Al Kiddush Hashem. This is Sugyan Sanhedrin on Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Beis. The Rambam Paskins in Hilchos Malachim Perek Yud that a Ben Noach is not obligated for an Anos forces a Ben Noach to violate one of the seven mitzvahs Ben Noach, even Avodah Zarah. He is allowed to comply if he was threatened at the point of death because he's not obligated in the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. So Paro was in effect implying the following question. I don't know if he said it to them, but he was saying, wait a minute, if you're endangering your life, then it must be because you view yourselves as Bnei Yisrael, and therefore the law of Yisrael, of Kiddush Hashem, the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem applies here. Ah, if that's the case, says Paro, now I got you in a trap. If that's why you put your life into danger, because you are committed to the position that your status as Jews obligates you in the midst of Kiddush Hashem, im kein eino mitzuvim al ha'ubrim, that you've already fallen into my trap and you have no mitzvah that enjoins you from killing the ubar. So it seems that according to the strict letter of the law, Paro catches them in some sort of a self-contradiction. Had they denied their status as Jews, then they could claim, well, we can't kill the embryos because of Ben Noach, who kills an embryo, it's a capital crime. But if that be the case, then Ein Ben Noach Mitzuv Al Kiddush Hashem, why are you putting your lives into danger? Says Paro, once you put your lives into danger, then you cannot claim that you have the status of Ben Noach. Ben Noach's not Mitzuv Al Kiddush Hashem to put his life into danger. Obviously, you're admitting that your status is that of a Jew, and you are governed, therefore, under the dinim of Yisrael. If that be the case, then what's your problem killing an Ubar? This was Paro's well-thought-out plan. Again, we're assuming both of them are sure. And in the point of Yafos, that Paro was a grace of Lamdin, he was a Mephalpil, and he figured this is the logic, and therefore he will succeed in achieving his goal, namely to have the male embryos destroyed. He himself didn't want to do it, but he figures he'll get the Mialdos or Ivrios to do it, and they couldn't possibly refuse, because if they refuse, then they're saying that they have the status of a Ben Noach, who's not allowed to kill an embryo. But then they have to do it under the duress, under the pressure of Sakana, because the Ben Noach is not Mitzuvah Kiddush Hashem. Ella, why are they putting their lives into danger to reject the compliance? It's because of Mesiris Nefesh for Kiddush Hashem. Then they're admitting that we have the status of Yisrael. If that be the case, they're allowed to kill the Ubrim. The Panim Yafos continues here and suggests that there might be other elements that come into play over here. For the time being, we'll put this on the side. But let's come full swing back to our question that now becomes a question not only on the Marsha, but also the Panim Yafos. Two of the commentators, both of which are interpreting this parsha of Mialdos HaIvrios, in the light of the premise, the assumption that the Jewish Mialdos could certainly put the embryos to death, because in Yisrael, there's no din with regard to Yisrael of a prohibition against killing an Ubar. As we pointed out, there are at least two Sugyos in Shas that we know of, and two Tosfos in Shas who go on record explicitly as saying that you're not allowed to kill an ubar. And that seems to be the assumption. However, it seems to me, and I'm coming here to defend the Marsha, if you come back and read the Marsha carefully, I think you could see an entirely different reading in the Marsha. The Marsha is working with the premise, I believe, that Paro's command was accompanied with a threat. Excuse me, a threat that if the Mialdos would not comply, they would be put to death. If that be the case, now I understand what the Marsha means when he says, Hutar lachem laharog uber b'mei imo. He doesn't mean that as a universal rule. There is no prohibition against killing an embryo in Dini Yisrael. That's absolutely fallacious, and that can't be maintained. What the Marsha means is that given the fact that there was a threat of death, that there was an honest-to-goodness Hakana situation here with regard to the Mialdos, they would have to comply because, in this case, Dochim Nefesh Mipnei Nefesh, meaning it's exactly similar to the case of the Mishnah in Olos, where we cut up the Ubar in order to save the mother if the birth process threatens the mother's life, as long as the baby has not popped its head out, which means that for the sake of saving a nefesh gomur, we will forfeit the life of a nefesh eno gomur. For the sake of survival of a living person, we will actually destroy the life of an embryo that hasn't yet come into this world as a living being. And if we apply that to the case of the Mialdos, we can understand what the Marsha means over here. Paro was confident that the Mialdos, under the pain of death, would certainly comply, because in their law, the status of an Uber is that of an Efesh She'eno Gomor. And therefore, we would certainly require that the Nefesh of being Doche, the Nefesh She'eno Gomor, for the sake of survival of the Nefesh Gomor. So they would be required, according to the halacha, to kill the embryo in order to save their own lives. And Paro thought that for sure they would do that. Perhaps we could add that that's why the pasuk goes out of its way to say vatir enam yaldos elokim, that they were willing to enter into the sakana, going beyond the letter of the law, because of that great fear of heaven, even though strictly al pidin, the halacha of kiddush Hashem here would not apply, because it's not one of the Gimel Averis Chamuris. This is not technically Shvichas Domim, because it's a Nefesh Eino Gomer. Again, even if I would postulate that Shvichas Domim has some, in the case of an Uber, has some relationship to Ritzicha, but nevertheless, certainly we see clearly from the Mishnah in Olos that we would destroy the life of the Uber in order to save a Nefesh Gomer. And applying that logic here, Paro was certainly within his rights, you know, halachically, with a clear, wise understanding and a tefisa of halacha, to assume that the uber, or the mialdos ivrios would certainly not endanger their lives for the sake of avoiding this avera, whatever name you'll call it, and therefore, vatirena es helokim means that they went beyond the letter of the law. I would like to share with you a Chiddush of the Ma'arit, which is in Chelek Aleph Siman Tzadi Zayin. He talks about the case of an Ubar, and he wants to know, even if you assume that an Ubar, killing an Ubar, comes under the Avera of Chavalah. Now, Chovil b'chavero is a violation of Pen Yosef. He says that logically, based on a Sugyan Sanhedrin Pei Hei, we can conclude that that Avera would not apply to a Yisrael. And listen to his logic. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Pei Hei, deriving a halacha from a pasuk, says that if someone is nigmar dino lehorek, if he's been condemned to die, if somebody would be chovel on this person, on this criminal who's about to be brought out to die, he would be potter. He would not have violated the Iser Chavola under the law of Pen Yosef. And why not? The answer is because the Gemara derives it from bi'amcha, bi'mekuyam sheba'amcha. Only someone who has a long life expectancy is normal, and he will live. So in such a case, there's an iser to kill him, and the iser of Ritzicha and the iser of Chabalah are equated one to the other. It means that since, in the case of murder, with regard to this person who's about to be brought out to death, there is no violation of murder, therefore, in the case of Chavala, there's no iser Chavala. The Minchas Chinuch applies this logic to the case of Chovel B'Treifa. If you're a Chovel and a person who, not in this case because he's condemned to die, he's a Treifa, meaning biologically we know that he's going to die, the cause of his death is already in existence, says the Minchas Chinuch, that Chavala would not be a Chiyuv here because since this person is a treifa and he would not, if somebody would murder him, he would not be in violation of murder, so too there's no violation of chavala. Therefore, coming back to the marit who assumes that the violation of harigas ubar comes under the iser of chavala, and again, you have to know how that kicks in the case of ben noach, but we'll come back to that in just a second. Be that as it may, in the case of Yisrael, if the Isur is a Chavala Isur, then once we talk about a person who is a Treifa, or who is, let's say, doomed to die because he's been condemned to death, then in such a case there is no Isur Chavala. So applying this logic, we could suggest why there's a fundamental difference between a Ben Noach who kills an Ubar and Yisrael who kills an Ubar. In the case of Ben Noach who kills an Ubar, the Ubar is considered a Nefesh Gomur. It's not to be equated with a Treifa or someone who's condemned to death, and therefore the Lav, the violation in the case of Ben Noach, is that of Shvichas Domim. But in the case of a Yisrael, when you're talking about an Ubar as a Nefesh Eino Gomur, and therefore it doesn't come strictly under Ritzicha, but rather it comes under the Iser Chavala, then Chavala only applies when Ritzicha applies. As we saw before, the equation between an Iser of Shvichas Domim, an Iser of Ritzicha, and an Iser of Chavala, Chavala only applies where Ritzicha applies. Since in the case of Ben Yisrael, there's no Iser Ritzicha on an Ubar, because an Ubar has the status of an Nefesh Einu Gomur, therefore, in the case of a Yisrael, there would be no Iser Chavala as well. So killing the Ubar would not come under this Iser of Chavala. And that would support perhaps the approach that we mentioned in the name of Tosus and Nida, which might have been one reading of the Marsha. I don't know if it's the right legitimate reading of the Marsha. We offered now a second possibility as to how to read the Marsha, but at least according to the first possibility, we could suggest that the Israel is allowed to kill an Uber because Chavala doesn't apply where Ritzicha does not. In any event, coming back to what we suggested in the Marsha, in our reading of the Marsha, we have to understand the following. What about the case of a Ben Noach? If we assume that, and this is unquestionable based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the first source that we started with on your page, Nun Zayinim Beis, that Adam be Adam, Domo Yishofech, that we extend the lav, the scope of the lav of Ritzich in the case of Ben Noach to include the killing of an Ubar. So then, what does the Marsha mean when he assumes, when he says the Paro assumes that a Ben Noach would not comply? So you could say that the Ben Noach doesn't, you know, he won't accept this command because it's so immoral. But you could question the following. If there was a threat of death for non-compliance, right, that was our premise, and that's why I told you that the Chassam Sofer has a long discussion about this. The Mialdo Seivrio says, the Gemara says, Tavon v'lo nitmu, even though he was Tovea them, they didn't give it up, they didn't comply because they wanted to involve themselves in an act of Mesiris Nefesh. But so we're assuming now that Paro backed up this command with the threat of death, then in the case of Ben Noach, it seems logical that you would assume that the Ben Noach would comply here in order to save his own skin. Because if he, even though he's involved in Ritzicha, and that's one of the Sheva Mitzvot Ben Noach, all of which are capital crimes, but nevertheless, the rule is that if an Anos, if somebody is forcing the Ben Noach at pain of death to violate one of the Sheva Mitzvot Ben Noach, then he doesn't have to comply. So if Paro was backing up this command with a threat, then the Ben Noach would certainly comply, and he would not have to, he would not have to give up his life because of Kiddush Hashem, since Ben Noach is not mitzuval Kiddush Hashem. So why does Paro assume that the Ben Noach would not listen to him, that if it was Mialdos Mitrios, they would not comply with his wish? And the answer, I think, is poshut, but very profound. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, on Daf Ayin Dalid, derives what I call the big three, the cardinal three sins for Kiddush Hashem, that's Shvichas Domim and Gilarais Avodah Zorah, from Psukim. But if you're very careful about the reading of the Gemara, you will see that only in two out of three of the Averos Chamuros is there a derivation from a Pasuk. And those are Avodah Zorah B'chol Nafshecha and Gilarais from the parasha of Naira Hamurashas Shazinza. You'll see there a Hekesh. In the case of Ritzicha, if somebody forces you at gunpoint to kill someone else, you're not allowed to kill him. The Gemara says that's not based on a pasuk, it's based on a svara, my chazis, who says your blood is redder than his. That svara, I believe, should apply to Ben Noach as well. If you are deriving psukim from psukim that there is a mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, v'ahavtas Hashem l'kech b'chol levavcha, b'chol napshecha, afilu no-tilas napshecha in the case of Avodah Zorah, and in the case of Gilead Rice, you also have a pasuk, then it makes sense to limit that halacha to the case of a Yisrael. In the case of Ben Noach, we would not apply this rule, and the reason for that is because Ein Ben Noach Mitzuva Al Kiddush Hashem. But in the case of Ritzicha, where the Gemara is operating with a svar of my chazis, it doesn't seem to be that that svar is limited to Yisrael. It should absolutely apply to Ben Noach. Who gives the right of a Ben Noach to kill him and to save his own skin and say, I'm going to actively violate Ritzicha for the sake of my life? Who says that your life is more significant in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam than his life? So therefore I would think that under the law of my chazis, the guy would not be allowed to kill anyone, including in this case an Ubar, and therefore Paro anticipated he would have some problem. There would be some static here if the midwives were non-Jewish. Now, I'd like to call your attention to an interesting sefer that I got a hold of recently, just a few days ago, actually. It's called Chavatzelas Hasharon. My son is a fan. Written by Rav Mordechai Kalibach from Eretz Yisrael. I can't tell you much about him, but it's a sefer that's organized on the Parshios. And he has a whole different take to an alternative to the Marsha to suggest the possibility as to why Paro commanded the Mialdos Ha'ivrios. And I'd like to share this with you. It's a very interesting pilpul, a very interesting chiddush. He bases himself on a Medrash Rabbah in Breishis, back on the Pasuk Shofech Dam Ha'odom Ba'odom Domi Yishofech Omrab Chanina Kulhun Kehilchos B'nei Noach. This pasuk from the beginning to end is revealing all the special halachas that apply to a Ben Noach. Number one, Beit Echad. Number two, B'dayon Echad. Number three, below Edim. Number four, below Asra. And listen to number five, Al Yidei Shaliach. And number six, Al Yidei Ubrin. Every single one of these six halachas is derived from the pasuk, one of which, the one he wants to call our attention to, is that Shliach, a Ben Noach who sends a Shliach to do an Avera, he too, not just the Shliach himself for sure would be Chayav because he violated the crime, but even the Meshaleach who sent him would also be culpable of the crime. And based on this fantastic Chiddush of the Medrash, darshaning the Pasuk of Shofech Dam Ha'odom, that a Ben Noach is Chayav if he sent a Shliach to do one of the Averos, says the Chafatzelos Hasharon, therefore Paro wanted to avoid Mialdos Hamitrios, because if he were to command a Mialedes to put the embryo to death, and we said that Bnei Noach al Musharim ala Ubrim, that would be a Shliach L'Dvar Avera. Paro would, Paro's actions would not be vindicated, but on the contrary, he would be guilty of Shvichas Domim no less than the Rotzeach himself, or in this case the Mialdos themselves. If he were to send a guy, then through the principle of Shlichus, he, Paro, would be liable, he'd be culpable under the halacha of Rotzeach. Meaning that the normal law of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira doesn't apply in the case of Ben Noach. But now the question is, how would Paro solve his, you know, achieve his goal by appointing a Mialedes Ivris? Again, it would be Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira for Ben Noach. And if you take a look at the halacha, the Yisod halacha of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira in the case of Ben Noach, you'll analyze the words of the Machne Ephraim. The Machne Ephraim in Hilchas Shluchim in Siman Yudalid says that the difference between a Ben Noach and Yisrael has to do with the following. Normally we say in the case of Yisrael that Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. In the case of a Ben Noach, Yesh Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. And this is based on the pasuk here and the derivation. So he writes that Makar halacha zu b'medrash the nachri yesh liach af l'dvar avera ubeber Yitzchak bahaga kosav. In our Chaim Siman Gimel he writes the makar ubeber b'parshas Noach hanal she nachri hahoreg chavero al yidei shlucho chayav vadvarim mechuvanim im divrei amasas binyamin. I'm just going to read the text as you see it, and then we'll interpret it. Shechidesh to be nachri l'nachri yesh din shlichus. V'hu l'fi shalo nismayta nachri b'parsha shlichus l'gamre. El rak shenachri eino yochol liyo shliach shal Yisrael. D'dinu sheyeh shliach dumya del mashaleach d'chsiv atem gam atem. He says the following chidush, that if a nachri, for example, kill someone al yidei shliach, he's chayev. The shaleach is chayev. In addition to the shliach himself, the shaleach is chayev. Why? Because yesh shlichus mi nachri l'nachri. The Torah excluded a nachri from having a shliach, but that's only if he has a shliach Yisrael. If he sends a Yisrael to do his bid, because in such a case, it's a violation of the rule that applies, the overall rule that defines candidacy for shlichus of Atem gam atem. There has to be an equation between the shliach and the mshaleach. They both have to be b'nei bris. In the case of a nachri, another nachri is equal to him, and there's no reason in that case to undermine the mechanics of shlichus. And indeed, we saw in the medrash in Noach that shlichus works in the case of a ben Noach. If this be the case, says the Chafetzel Sasharon, we can now understand why Paro told the Mialdos Ha'imrios to kill the Umrim. Had he commanded the Mialdos Ha'mitrios, there would be shlichus for an Akum, because they would be sending a Nochri on behalf of Nochri, and therefore Paro would be culpable as well. If, on the other hand, he sends a Yisrael, then a Yisrael is not a shliach on behalf of an Akum, because there's no admixture of Yisrael and Nachri in the parasha of Shlichus. Therefore, Paro would be completely exempt and free of any condemnation of murder here, because he, Paro, was not involved. Rather, he sent a Shliach. So it comes out a very fantastic chiddush here that in the case of a guy, sending a guy, he'd be chayiv. I mean, this has tremendous implications, just not just for mafioso-style murders, but for a host of different cases of shluchim. I mean, if let's say one physician, the head physician, would send even a resident who's learning obstetrics to murder to abort the baby, it could be that not only is the attending physician responsible for a violation of Ritzicha, it could be that even the supervisor, the head, the chief resident on call, who commanded, who gave the psak for the doctor to implement this, he also would be culpable. However, the question here is, how does Shliach L'Dvar Avera work, or how does Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera work? We're saying that a Ben Noach will be killed as a capital crime if he sends a Shliach. Now, is this operating midin Shlichus? The question is, perhaps there's another way of understanding the halacha of a guy being chayef for sending a Shliach. Maybe it's not under the halach of shlichus in the technical sense. Maybe ein shlich l'dvar avera should apply even in the case of nachri, because the guy could say, I never believed that he would violate such a severe law, and therefore I didn't take the shlichus seriously. I don't know if you could apply the logic of divrei harav, divrei hatamah, divrei mishomim in this case. Maybe yes, maybe no. But be it as it may, ein shlich l'dvar avera could be applied to a nachri. But perhaps the chiyuv in this medrash, when a guy sends a guy to kill, is midin gram ritzicha. He's considered a gorim ritzicha, which is a subcategory of ritzicha. In fact, the Rambam, in I think it's in Perek Beis Milchus Rotzeach, speaks about causing someone's death. Like, for example, you tie him up in the sun, or you might talk about tying him up in front of the railroad tracks. In these cases, we can discuss Gram Ritzicha. The Rambam says in such cases he's a Rotzeach, but in Bezin Shel Yisrael there's a halacha of Ein Bezin Mimisin also. I don't think that would apply to a Ben Noach. So maybe when we say that a Ben Noach is Chayev for sending a Shliach, he would be Chayev under the law of a Gorim. And now we have to ask ourselves the following question. If Paro would have sent a Mialedes Nachris, a Mitzris, to do his bidding, would he be chayev under the law of Shlichus? And the answer would be that even if I grant you that there's no Shliach L'Dvar Vera, even in the case of a Nachri sent to Nachri, but nevertheless the case of Paro might be different. He might be chayev not the Torah's Shliach, but Midin Gram Ritzicha. Now, admittedly, we have to analyze what are the parameters of Gram Ritzicha. When does it apply and when does it not apply? There's a whole sugya in Perek HaKones and Bava Kama about HaSocher Eide Sheker Lahoyet. Yeah, if I make you an offer you can't refuse, then under certain conditions it might be considered Gram. You wouldn't have done it if not for the offer, if not for the fact that I caused you to do it, and therefore I am the cause of the Avera. Here, where we're assuming in the parsha of Melech Mitzrayim that he added a certain threat over here, then it would seem that no matter what you say about Socher and all these other cases, but if you categorize the Shlichus Edvar Ver, the Chiyuv of sending a Shliach in the case of a guy as Gram Ritzicha, and that's why he's Chayuv, then in the case of Paro, who can certainly assume that they would listen to him because otherwise he's going to put them to death, that would be a Gram Ritzicha. So I think the answer to this, you're going to have to come back to square one and say that Paro would assume that they would not comply because of the Svara of my Chazis. Because since Ben Noach is Muzar, is Mitzuvah al Harigas Ubrim, and Harigas Ubrim for Ben Noach is a full-fledged Ritzicha, then we come back to the principle, the Svara of my Chazis. So again, everything hinges on whether Paro would anticipate that his pressure would cash in or not. We're trying to suggest that his pressure would work. And if his pressure would work, then the Mialdos Mitzios would desist, and he doesn't gain anything, therefore, if he wants to achieve his goal of killing the firstborn, of killing the male children, the male Jewish children, he wouldn't achieve that goal. If on the other hand you would assume that his pressure might not, may or may not work out, then you could alleviate Paro even though there is a Shlichus L'Dvar Vera for Nachri, but that comes under, according to this understanding, the halacha of Gram, and we're not so sure he would be a Gorahim, because he would have doubts whether they would comply. So it vacillates back and forth on that. But assuming we come to the conclusion that with regard to a Ben Noach, there would be a lot of static, so to speak, there would be a lot of question as to whether Ben Noach would really take this law and accept it and swallow the pill, maybe he would desist, because that's what the law of Benoah would require, then Paro would not achieve his goal. Whether Paro would be responsible under the law of Shlichus if they had implemented his request, you know, that's something that has to be taken under the revisement of the halach of Gram Ritzicha. Paro, on the other hand, assumed that the Mialdos HaIvrios would certainly kill the Ubrin, and the way we interpret it is because the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem would not apply here because the Uber is a Nefesh She'eno Gamur, but rather the principle which is formulated by the Mishnah in Olos would apply, that as long as the embryo has not popped its head out, it would be a Nefesh She'eno Gamur, and Dochim, and we are Docha Nefesh She'eno Gamur for the sake of saving a Nefesh Gamur. So Paro really had a Lumdisha assumption here. The only glitch in his whole assumption here was that there is such a thing as going beyond the letter of the law of Kiddush Hashem, and rather than actively involving. You see, in the case of the physician who realizes that the mother's life is in danger, you know, he can't make this choice decision and say, well, I'm not going to violate this law of Ritzichas Ubrim because I want to be Makadi Shem Shamayim, I want to go beyond. That doesn't make any bit of sense, because then he's forfeiting the life of the mother, and that you can't do, she's a Nefesh Gomer. But in the case of a third party, whose life is being threatened to kill an Ubar, and then it's a choice between their life and the other life, then they certainly have the ability to be Makadi Shem Shamayim by going beyond the letter of the law, and saying, I'm not going to violate this Avera, no way, no how. And especially if you consider the possibility that killing an Uber might come under Avizrayu, the Ritzicha, then we certainly understand the Yiras Shamayim of the Mialdos. One last piece, we mentioned that according to the Ma'arit, the Yisod and the definition that underlies the prohibition against killing an Uber is Chavola. And we spoke about Chavola and Nefesh and Ugamur, etc., etc. The only thing is, you might take into consideration the following factor. Is there mechila on chavola? Meaning, can I tell you to hit me? And especially in the case of Ben Noach, it could be the case of Ben Yisrael, you're not allowed to do that. The Gemara is psukim for that. I don't have the right to tell you to injure me. I don't really own my body, but that might be Yisrael. In the case of Ben Noach, I'm not sure. So that would be interesting, and that would depend upon whether the chavola here is the chavola ba'em or chavola ba'ubar. If the chavola is in the mother, because uber yerech imo, then the mother would have rights to say, I don't mind. She would have the choice decision to go for this abortion. And there would be no prohibition because there might be mechila on the iser chavola. The flip side of this is to say that there's no mechila on chavola, and even if she would give that up, then and waive her rights, there would still be afal pichen. There would still, nevertheless, be a prohibition of chavola. So that would be as far as the Maritz Chiddush is concerned. More likely, the simple approach is to assume that the harigas uber, certainly in the case of Ben Noach, comes on the shpichas dom in mamish. That's how the Rambam classifies it. And in the case of Ben Noach, he'll be put to death for killing an Uber. And all sorts of scenarios of abortion have to be considered in the light of this discussion, we're not intending here to paskin any halachas, but you should be aware of the fact that there are many considerations that have to be taken into consideration.